and welcome to Denver Music Community, where we bring you interviews, news, and reviews from Denver, Colorado. I'm Boots.
And I'm Sean. This month, we review Dead Boyfriend's new album, Strangers Forever, and we interview local musician Christopher Ryan. But first, the news.
On February 6th, Colorado went from level orange to level yellow. This means that there are looser restrictions for live music. According to a Westword article, this means that indoor unseated event venues can hold up to 50% capacity, but no more than 50 to 100 people, depending on size and space. Indoor seated events can have up to 100 people or 50% capacity, whichever is smaller, and outdoor events can have up to 175 people or 50% capacity, again, whichever is smaller. Additionally, venues operating as indoor restaurants can have 50% capacity or 50 people. This also means that outdoor venues like Red Rocks and Lovett Pavilion can ask for zoning variances that can help increase the number of people who attend those event spaces, thus helping them with their bottom line. Though nothing in the article mentioned when spaces might get back to allowing 100% capacity. The space on Larimer Square that used to host the market is now home to Larimer Records Cafe. In addition to being your standard coffee shop, complete with snacks and booze, the Record Cafe will cater to people's love of music. Not only will they have listening stations and vinyl for sale, the team is also working with several vinyl experts to booth DJs in the space as well as curate its music offerings. They are open now for all your listening and beverage needs. You can find out more about Larimer Record Cafe at all the links in the show notes. Finally, there has been some backlash against the venues that have received the Colorado Artist Relief Grants that caused at least one venue owner to return some funds. According to The Know, some people expressed frustration that many corporate-aligned businesses received funds. According to Colorado Creative Industries Chairman Tim Schultz, the committee looked at organizations who had taken the largest hit in their operating budget. Larimer Lounge, Lost Lake, and Globe Hall owners Chris and Gwen Campbell received a total of $340,000 for the three venues, ultimately returning $70,000 after finding out some venues got nothing. Though Chris and Gwen's venue is ticketed through AEG, it does not negate the fact that they are owned by local individuals, and according to Gwen, the clubs have been in dire straits for months. An additional $30,000 has been returned by other venues who no longer need the financial assistance, and according to Margaret Hunt, the executive director for the Colorado Creative Industries, those funds will be reallocated. This month, we will be reviewing Dead Boyfriend's Strangers Forever. Dead Boyfriend is a three-piece, piano-driven, punk adjacent band out of Denver, Colorado.
The album starts with an introduction that has people howling, and it really reminds us of the beginning of the pandemic.
Yeah, it was very emotional to me for some reason, being reminded of that event that was so long ago, it seems somehow, but was really not even a year ago at this point.
It opens up the album with those kind of feels, and then it launches into a song called Nothing Matters. Which is kind of a folk punk feeling. It's got a saxophone, which is cool. And one thing that's cool throughout this album is the diverse instrumentation.
Absolutely. And most of the beginning third to a half of this album really focuses on that kind of folky, sea shanty, olden time vibe that is adjacent to folk and punk.
Yeah, and it just is a kind of old timey folk feeling.
It also seemed really reminiscent of bands that I enjoyed in that folk punk genre, Gorgor Bordello, Mischief Brew.
In the style of the album in general is kind of this slop pop, like sloppy bedroom indie kind of music. Reminds me a little bit of La 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 La, and their kind of youthfulness and carefree feeling.
Yeah. In most of the tracks in the beginning part of this album, the vocals, the saxophone, are more present than the traditional rock instruments. This album, we can see that everything is perfectly imperfect. It is imperfect in a way that is done intentionally, and that is very reminiscent of this band's punk roots.
You know, a little research, this album is mixed by a person named Destino Mondragon.
And he's affiliated with Youth on Record. The band is also a three-piece, though it was brought to our attention that what we believe is the singer Ash recorded most of this album themselves in their bedroom. This album is overall really great. However, a lot of the slow songs are concentrated in the middle of the album, which does make it a little bit dragging. This album is already long to begin with some songs upwards of 5 to 7 minutes and 11 total tracks.
One thing we were talking about for the singing style that we like, a low
alto.
Yeah, kind of tone. And that also reminds me of La 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 a bit.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of a style that you could attribute to that, but I can't really.
Right. You don't see many alto female singers in fronting music groups, and it's very refreshing that happened in this group.
My ex-best friend is a lesbian. She goes to town on a girl's downtown, and in her head she's a waitress, collecting cash for the wife and kids, a wife and kids she abandoned.
This song made us feel like we should be in a saloon, like drinking whiskey in the 1800s.
Yeah, it's definitely transportive. And many of the songs on this album are that transportive sailor and whiskey type.
General abstract feeling.
Yeah. But at this point, this is where the album takes a turn. There is definitely, from this point forward, emo and early 90s vibes with nice instrumentals.
You're really starting to get this youthful feeling of helplessness. And yeah, it does have this very 90s emo feel. Really great instrumental bits that's kind of refreshing, and really solid bass lines.
Yeah, and going into the next track, they also have emotional, heavy rock feelings in these last few songs.
Coughing, you don't need anyone to be your coughing. You don't need anyone to be your coughing. You don't need.
So these, as I said, these last kind of few songs have more of an emo, pop, heavier vibe than the punk and folk punk influences of the beginning of the album. And overall, it's a very interesting way to compose music together, but I think ultimately it conveys a feeling of a time that is both nostalgic and sad mm-hmm. through the ideas of the pandemic and things.
Yeah. And whether you're listening to this as a teenager or not, I mean, it brings you back to that kind of feeling.
Safely into bed, then shave my head and turn into someone that only craves regret.
Overall, I would definitely recommend this album, though it may have a few flaws. If you love that folk, emo, slop pop aesthetic, this will definitely be one that you want to check out.
This month, we sit down and speak with local musician Christopher Ryan. Can you start out by telling our listeners who you are and what your music project is all about?
Yeah, so my name is Christopher Ryan. I'm a multi-instrumentalist singer-songwriter. And I play a style of music that I like to call Obscuricana, sort of because I like to take a lot of different types of music, a lot of different types of instruments from all over the world and blend them together. Because Obscuracana is just sort of a term I made up and sort of generic, I also tell people that I play modern indie folk. And most of my music is about sort of hope or hardship. And when I say folk, it's not necessarily that I'm playing just like all folk songs, but most of my stuff is sort of based in the acoustic world. So when people hear folk, they sort of automatically go towards those more acoustic, organic sounds, less of what you'd hear in like a highly, highly processed pop world or really distorted rock world. Right. And so I sort of say modern indie folk just because it gives people that flavor and that idea.
Mm-hmm. Cool. How did you get started making music?
Yeah, I feel like I've been basically playing music since before I was born. In fact, my mom's got a story that while she was still pregnant with me, she was out seeing like a Broadway musical type show. And I was inside apparently just like kicking along with the rhythm of like the bass and the drums. And probably unsurprisingly, I started playing drums when I was real young, about third grade. I started playing drums and percussion. And that was my main musical outlet for many, many years. I'm still a drummer and percussionist and love to play with other groups and other people. But as I grew musically, obviously, I started joining a lot of other bands and I was starting to write a lot of lyrics and things. And then I was kind of like, you know, I really feel like I have a lot to say. And drums are not usually a solo instrument or an instrument that you usually write with.
All right.
So I picked up guitar and started playing guitar, and that was sort of my first step into that singer-songwriter world. And it's funny, I mean, even today I've got, you know, stacks of lyrics that I've never put music to that I wrote years and years and years ago playing with other bands. But yeah, and then I've sort of blended all that together. I play guitar now, I play a few other instruments as well, the drum set and percussion stuff. I do a lot of live looping stuff. I try to mix that in with my sets, you know, and I do a couple songs occasionally, like just me and a hand drum and voice. So try to do some things to sort of diversify a little bit different than how many people there are out there with acoustic guitars, singer-songwriters.
Right.
Right. Yeah. And using the live looping can allow you to fill out your sound more and allow you to have a more robust kind of feel to your music as well.
Definitely. Yeah. And actually, one of my favorite toys is this little guy here, the Pog. It's a polyphonic octave generator pedal. Essentially, I can use that to make my guitar either sound like a 12-string or sound like a bass guitar. Which is great for live looping. I mean, obviously I don't use it in recording, but if you're in a live situation and you just want to lay down a bass track rather than having to have like a whole separate guitar and a whole nother input on your channel board, you can just click a button and essentially get bass guitar type sounds or 12 string type sounds. And yeah.
Nice. Yeah, you make me feel like a band. Is that electroharmonic?
It is. It is. I really like their stuff. It's yeah, it's a little pricey, unfortunately.
Right.
But almost everything I've used of theirs, I've really enjoyed.
Definitely.
And it's not as expensive as some pedals that are out
there. That's true. Yeah, you get into that boutique pedal world, boutique amp world, and yeah, and get poor pretty quick.
A lot of money.
Oh yeah.
So can you go on from how you started making music and talk about what your contemporary music creative process is like?
Yeah, I was thinking about this before the interview, and my music process is a little bit different for, I feel like, almost every song that I write. First of all, I've always got like rhythms going in my head. I've always got sounds going in my head. Even when I'm going about my day-to-day, you know, world, I'll be in the kitchen, all of a sudden I'll be just like drumming or or sometimes I'm listening to something on the radio and I hear kind of a catchy melody and that'll spark some ideas in my mind of some words.
So it sounds like you're kind of always thinking about it.
Constantly, constantly, constantly. What's interesting is as a songwriter, I feel like I've got a lot to say with lyrics. And as I mentioned earlier, I've got stacks of lyrics that I've just never put music to. And I've obviously been, you know, speaking since I was a young kid and putting sentences together, but I haven't been playing the guitar nearly as long, and so I feel like I don't have quite as much vocabulary on the guitar, if that makes sense. And so oftentimes it's that I'll come up with some kind of clever riff on the guitar, and I'm like, oh, let me go check my lyric stacks and see if there's something that fits that, or let me, that's really good, I've got to capture that, you know, what would be a good hook, and maybe I'll maybe I'll sing out, you know, a melody that'll go with that. Some like da-da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da-da, you know, some kind of syncopated melody, and then be like, okay, what are the words that need to fill that in? Like, now that I've got the melody and I've got this really cool guitar groove, what kind of words can I put in there? So that's one process. Another whole process is sometimes I've literally just got something to say and I pick up my guitar and I start playing and like everything comes out at once. The music happens, the lyrics happen. Usually if that's the case, I've then got to go back and sort of tighten the lyrics down. I'll come back over a couple days or a couple weeks, but like the whole structure, you know, happens in one sitting, which is wonderful when that happens to me. And then I've got a few things that are just instrumental pieces that I've never really written lyrics for because I just feel like there's some kind of beautiful instrumental piece. So yeah, it's sort of different, but it is always happening in my head. There's something going on, some kind of rhythm, some kind of melody, some kind of words.
It seems like going back to that first kind of method for song creation, that it's very rhythmically driven, kind of probably based on the fact that drums were your first instrument. And would you say that that then is maybe the way that you most often create songs?
Yeah, I would say more often than not, the songs are based in some kind of groove. There's something going on in my head. There's some kind of groove. Or there's just something I really, really want to say. Like something that's on my heart, in my mind. Something that I feel like I've got to make a commentary about. And then sometimes it's literally trying to find the instrumentation to fit that commentary. If that makes any sense. Because, you know, sometimes you want to say something that's a little sad. Sometimes you want to say something that's very joyful. Yeah, I wish I could just say I always wrote in this one style, but that's not the case.
Well, who are some of your musical influences?
My musical influences are everywhere across the map, and I really enjoy things that way. I'm old enough that I still have CD cases from when I was young, you know, just stacked with CDs. And even if I go back and I listen to like or look at the music that I was listening to in like middle school or high school, it's really, really diversified. I've got everything in my CD collection from, you know, heavy metal to rap to jazz to classical. And I like things that way. As a musician, I tend to pull inspiration from people who I find that excel musically. I'm really interested in people who I feel like, you know, have some level of virtuosity on their instruments, although that's not necessarily my style of music. Bass guitar, I love Victor Wooten. Drumming, I love Dave Weckl. He played with Chick Corea, you know, so like really jazzy, really technical stuff. But then like as someone who just enjoys listening to music, I love being able to just sort of turn my mind off completely, you know, just bop along like with a really good groove. So I think of a band like Cake, who had like really good rhythms or like really good like driving bass guitar parts. Or Weezer, who had like this just massive, you know, wall of distorted sound that would just carry you. And that's the kind of stuff that I latched onto when I was younger, was either stuff that I thought was like really sort of virtuoso type music that pushed me and made me think in my mind and sort of count along like, oh, they're playing in 7 or they're playing in 13, like this is weird. Or like just something where I could turn my mind off and really enjoy it.
Do you want to talk about what you've personally found to be your greatest musical achievements?
Oh, man, that's such a great question. So the first thing I want to say, I mean, in the music business in particular, there is sort of always like this race to popularity. How many eyeballs can I get? How many people can hear my stuff? That can translate to number of streams you have online or number of people that watch your YouTube videos. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but there is a real danger of equating your own musical talent, skills, or joy with just the sheer numbers that you're seeing on your social media channels or the sheer numbers of people who are walking into a concert venue. And I think that can be a dangerous place to be. I've got a YouTube channel, and one of the things that I love to say when I sign off on my YouTube videos is dream your life and live your dream. And that's not to say like, oh, I'm dreaming that I'm going to be a billionaire and then it's just going to magically happen. It's more like, what is the kind of life that you really, truly want to be living? How are you going to work to try to achieve that success? And so for me, you know, my dream idyllic life is not necessarily going to be that I'm going to be on the road 300 days a year and I'm playing massive sold out venues. I want an amazing work-life balance. Obviously, I'd love to have recognition and I'd love to have fans that enjoy my music. But at the same time, I also want to be a great husband and now a great father. That's an interesting thing as well. So when I think of my, I think the original question was, what are the great musical achievements that I've made? Was that the question?
Yes.
So when I think of those great musical achievements for me, it's those musical achievements in the context of both what I've done for, I'd say, career, what those highlights are, but also in terms of the life that I've been able to carve out for myself, that I get to do something. From the perspective of the life I've carved out for myself, it's that I get to do something that I love, that I get to write, create, record, and perform music. Before the pandemic, I was playing basically every single week, many nights a week out there performing mm-hmm. everywhere from bars and coffee shops to clubs and venues, farmers markets. And I was getting to be in front of people all the time playing music and bringing joy to people. And I also got to have this life with this woman I love and in a house in a place I love in Colorado where the mountains are right there and I can drive off into the mountains and go ski or hike. To me, that is one of my greatest achievements in terms of lifestyle. So when I say dream your life, live your dream, it's kind of finding what is that that you really want to have and how can you make it happen. As far as just like pure self-promotion, like felt really good to play some big event. 2019, I had the opportunity to study with Larry Mitchell. He was a Grammy Award winning guitarist and producer. Amazing, amazing performer. And I was studying at this place called the Atlantic Center for the Arts, and I did this 3-week residency down there. And while I was studying with Larry, there was a group of poets studying with Joy Harjo, who's the current U.S. Poet Laureate of the United States. And she's also an amazingly talented saxophonist. I can think we had a couple of jam sessions at night. And one time I was like back behind the percussion kit and I got like my djembe and shaker and whatever. And I look over to my right and here's this Grammy award-winning producer guitarist like jamming. And I look to my left and here's the current like United States Poet Laureate. And I'm like,
nice.
How did I get here? Like, just in terms of like a personal, like, this feels amazing. It's like, how did I get here? How did this happen? What an amazing, amazing musical moment and achievement. So I, you know, for me, as far as like one of those sort of peak mountaintop moments, getting to play with a Grammy Award winner and the United States Poet Laureate was way, way up there.
That's awesome. Well, I guess to shift gears a little bit, what are some of your favorite venues in the Denver area?
Yeah. So again, I can answer this sort of two ways. One is venues to go to as a listener. As a listener, I'm always looking for a venue that I would say is either really, really unique or really intimate. Some of the best shows I've seen have not been, you know, like the mega giant, huge tour festival things. They're really intimate, moving connections. So as far as venues that are unique, obviously, I mean, you got to point out Red Rocks. It's right in our backyard. I mean, it's...
Oh, for sure. Yeah. It's gorgeous.
Yeah. And when magic happens there, when you've got a beautiful night and you can look up and see the stars above and the Red Rock walls on either side of you and you're just like being bathed in a wall of sound.
Oh, man, I missed that.
Yeah. You're in another world almost. And it's you can forget about everything that's happening outside that venue. And that is pure magic. There's nothing else to say. That's pure magic. So that's obviously, you know, a really unique venue. I love the Chautauqua Auditorium up in Boulder. 100-year-old, essentially like pole barn, quasi-indoor, quasi-outdoor venue, really intimate in terms of, I think it's like 1,300-person seating capacity, and just really, really unique stuff. And occasionally they get some really big acts that come through there. And so to see someone who's been playing to tens of thousands of people on their tour come through and then play a show for, you know, 1,200 people just a night later is, I'd say, a really, really magical thing. Those bands, I think, often get a special energy from being in that room, too, because they've been used to having sort of this big stadium type experience or big outdoor bowl venue type experience. Yeah, and then they come into what's kind of an intimate setting and they just light the place on fire in a good way. And so I love that kind of thing. As a performer, I love so many different venues in this town. But again, I would say some of my best experiences have actually been in really tiny, unique places where I've just had absolutely magic moments. Prior to the pandemic, I was holding down a residency over at Burns Family Artists and Ales. I played there every month. You know, just they don't even have a proper stage. But I can remember playing a set over there a little before this whole pandemic went and looking in the back and just seeing like this girl like weeping from the music I was playing. And like getting to make this connection with someone that closely is just so amazing. I love playing actually Alamo Drafthouse. I know that's kind of a weird one.
It's a cool spot.
Really beautiful stage they've got in there. So Alamo Drafthouse in Denver on Colfax, the Barfly, which is their bar. They've got like a really cool stage in there. Every time I've gone in there, they've always had a great professional sound person working with me. They always treat me huge amounts of just respect. They're always on time. They're always, you know, they're always professional. They're always sober, which is yeah. really, which is really nice. And, you know, just accommodating when I do my live looping stuff, a lot of the time I've just got tons and tons of gear with me and lots of mics and lots of hookups. And I run a mixer on stage that I then send to the back of the house. And they're just always really good and accommodating. So that's, I'd say one of my more enjoyable places to play.
Cool. That is a very unique place.
I wasn't even aware that they had shows.
Yeah. And again, I don't know what's going on with the whole pandemic thing right now. They bring in some really, really interesting events to Alamo Drafthouse.
That's really awesome. I know you already kind of spoke about your story at your residency, but is there any other stories, interesting, silly, or otherwise, you'd like to share about your experiences playing music?
Yeah, so one of the, there's a few stories that stick out in my head, but sort of one of my favorite stories that I like to remember, especially when times get tough now, or when I have a bad show or a bad gig, I think back to one of my first gigs that I ever played on guitar. So at that point in time, I'd been playing drums and percussion for a lot of years, and I'd played with a lot of people and with a lot of different bands and groups. But I picked up guitar, I was learning, had really never performed in front of anyone as far as guitar and singing. And I was in Alaska at the time. And a buddy of mine played guitar and sang, and he got us this gig at a bar. And it was basically like he was playing guitar and singing. I was like doing some percussion stuff, some background vocals. And then I was going to play like 5 or 6 songs on my guitar and sing. You know, not that big a deal. I'd essentially give his voice a break every, you know, 4 or 5 songs, play something. But I think we had like a 3-hour set or something that they hired us for. Yeah. I think maybe I'd played 1 or 2 open mics at that point in time. And about an hour or hour and a half into the gig, he got violently ill. Like came down with the flu, like was running like 102 fever, like started vomiting, clearly couldn't play. And so he took a set break and he looked at me and he's like, "I'm sorry, I can't continue playing. You're going to have to finish this out by yourself and just figure it out." And I'm like, so I had like maybe like 10 songs that I knew. And it's like, all right, great.
Just like,
I'll figure out how to fill an hour, hour and a half of space.
Just like slow it down.
So I did. Yeah. I went out and I like, you know, chatted with the audience and I'd like play something and like sort of ramble on with a story. And then went through all my songs and like came back and played something again because it's like, well,
nice. Keep him engaged.
Yeah, it's like, well, who knows if that person was here 45 minutes ago and I played this song. But, you know, it was like trial by fire. And I'm sure it wasn't great. I'd love to see a video recording of it. But I made it. I made it out the other side.
Yeah. Nice.
We got paid. Like,
good for you in the
no
end.
No one booed me out of the bar. Like, no one threw stuff at me. And I think that just surmises so much about the music business. Sometimes sometimes you get thrown into situations where you're just way out of your depth and you gotta make it happen. And sometimes you kind of gotta fake it till you make it in terms of being like, oh, well, look, here's what I can do for you. Here's the service I can bring to you. Here's how many people I think I can bring into your club. Or here's why you should hire me for this, you know, this particular whatever it is festival. Mm-hmm. And then find a way to make that thing a reality.
Heck yeah.
So
I imagine that, well, maybe not the best confidence booster at the time. Looking back on it, you can say, well, at least I did it and I completed it. In hindsight, it can show you that even when things seem daunting, overwhelming, or otherwise abysmal in the moment, that, you know, you can make it through these difficult situations that you sometimes find yourself in.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that's it exactly. Growth isn't always comfortable. I mean, I think that's very true in life, you know, when growth usually means being outside of our comfort zones and trying something new. Mm-hmm. And often that means failing and failing a few times and picking yourself back up and trying to do it again until you don't fail, or trying to find another way of doing something.
Yeah, it's really the only way to get somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. No one starts out on the mountaintop.
Right.
So,
well, since you're here and since you have this platform, is there anything you'd like to say?
Yeah. I mean, a number of things. I think, wow, I got so many things going through my head right now. I mean, the first is, obviously, we're in an incredibly unprecedented time with this pandemic going on, with the social unrest we're seeing in our country around the election time. I don't know when you're listening to this podcast, but right now we're just about to have Joe Biden inaugurated. We've had a lot of civil unrest in the country, a lot of heavy political opinions, and we're in the middle of a global pandemic. So that's where I'm coming from as I'm saying this, whenever you're listening to this interview. And I think regardless of what you believe or where you are politically, things that I'm reminded of during this time is just how important the arts are, and how important the arts are for Absolutely. Us to be able to express feelings and emotions and thoughts that words alone cannot. And I think that's one of the great powers of art and music in particular, is you can play a particular chord progression and you're already emoting sadness, or you're already emoting joy before you even put words to whatever it is you're going to be performing. And the absolute power of art to help us as individuals connect with maybe what we can't even articulate with our own words. I think that's so mm-hmm. powerful in terms of connecting with ourselves, connecting with our own emotions, understanding and expressing ourselves, and then also being able to connect with other people during a time when there's obviously been a lot of unrest and a lot of pain. And I certainly don't want to discount the suffering anyone's gone through, especially folks who've lost friends and family to COVID. The ability to reach out to each other through art, something which transcends political backgrounds, transcends religious beliefs, and frankly transcends language. I was just on a Zoom call last week with some folks from a guy from Germany and Spain. And it was like, man, this is like, you know, we're all connected through this musical thing. And like, what a cool thing to be able to connect even across cultures and across languages. I just think that's so powerful. And to me, I think that is one of the greatest powers of music, is this ability to cut across cultures and language barriers and religious and political beliefs and connect Definitely. With people and connect with our humanity.
Yeah.
That was good.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
For the very last thing, can you tell people how to support you, where they can find your music and all that?
Yeah. Yeah. So my name is Christopher Ryan, singer-songwriter from Denver, Colorado. You can find me online at therealchristopherryan.com, or you can find me on social media at therealchristopherryan. So facebook.com/therealchristopherryan, instagram.com/therealchristopherryan, youtube.com/therealchristopherryan, Google The Real Christopher Ryan, you'll find me. I've got a fun YouTube channel where obviously I get to play my own music, but I also do some fun sort of tips and tricks about being a professional musician. And I also interview some people on there. So I interview other musicians and talk about cool. gear and that kind of a thing. And then obviously you can find my stuff on Spotify and Amazon and iTunes and all that stuff as well.
Cool. Well, hey, we appreciate you coming on today. Oh, yeah, and we appreciate you coming on and being one of the artists that we can work with.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Well, have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thank you guys so much.
Thank you for joining us for this month's podcast. You can find all the links to the things we talked about today in the show notes. Additionally, if you like what we do, you can support us on Venmo, Patreon, or by buying our t-shirts. You can find those linked at denvermusiccommunity.com, also in the show notes. We release a podcast on the last weekend of every month. Thanks for tuning in.